Welcome to Changing Room 4, the Championship Rugby podcast with me, Jamie Mountain, and my two friends, Charles Fidler and Sid Young. Welcome, boys. Welcome to the first ever episode. How are we feeling?
Excited, nervous, and genuinely can't wait to get started.
I'm a bit tired and a bit sad because I arrived late and Jamie shouted at me.
Somebody's got to keep order.
I thought it would have been 6 o'clock at least, but hey, whatever.
We're can't here. Have people just it. Turning up whenever they want to.
No, that's right. That's right. It's very unprofessional.
Terrible form. So obviously this week we welcome back the championship, which is what we're all here to talk about. So long-awaited return. Been a year out. Almost a year since coronavirus first hit, and the impact has really been felt by the championship teams. But it's returned not in the format that we'd got used to. We're missing London Scottish this year, so no London Scottish. They've dropped out because they decided they weren't going to be able to meet the funding required for the COVID testing. So we're one short. Only 11 teams in the league this year. What have we got then? So it's 10 games, just to recap. There's 10 games this season. Everybody plays each other once. Whether you get that home and away or not is just down to chance. So 5 games at home, 5 games away. And then the top two at the end of the season go into a 2-leg playoff to decide who's crowned champions of the Green King IPA Championship. What do we think of the format, guys?
So, I mean, I like the idea of a short, sharp, intense season. If it's compared to, you know, having no season at all, just like the rest of, you know, community rugby, we've got the roadmap now, like, you know, how we're getting out of coronavirus and all the rest of it. And I really like that the championship is still happening. Obviously, it kind of has to happen because of the whole salaries thing that we're going to get onto later. But I like that it's being put on that level, you know, and it is really being considered, you know, an elite level game, despite the funding cuts and whatever else and every other challenge that the championship has to face, which we're going to be talking about loads over the coming weeks.
Yeah, of course, the RFU cut the funding in pretty much half just before the season got cancelled last year.
I read somewhere that in real terms it ends up being like 75% or whatever. Like, you know, a 75% cut and behind what they've already got. And then obviously the COVID impact, again, we could talk about for hours, and, you know, everyone's been talking about for however long, is monumental. So to have a season at all is really, really good. I'm really pleased about that. But then the idea of not having a home and away to balance it out, I mean, I don't know whether that you can say, oh yeah, it's not going to make any difference at all because we've got no fans, or there's only going to be a few fans in there, and it's, you know, it's going to be, it's just, all just a rugby pitch anyway. Or whether, you know, even though it's an empty stadium, it really does make a difference.
I guess those comparisons will be drawn at the end of the season, won't
they? Yeah, I suppose there's one way to find out. Fiddler, what do you think?
For me, really pleased that we've got some rugby back. It's brilliant to have something else to talk about other than the Premiership, and the sort of the shame that the Six Nations, in an England point of view, isn't going so well. So it's great to have the Championship back. It's great to have some rugby to look forward to. I like the format. I think it certainly builds on the 2-conference system that they originally thought of. Puts it in a nice simple league. I agree that the home and away fixture choice could ultimately have an impact, but I think everyone's in the same boat. You know, you still got, if you've got to go away, you've got to travel, and you've got to play what's in front of you. Very much like if you've got to do that as a home team, you've still got to play what's in front of you. So yeah, I mean, I think it's just, I think for me the big thing is the buys. It's when you get your rests. So I think that will probably play a huge impact in some of the rounds coming up. But for me, really excited. I think it's nice and simple, and it's just nice to have some rugby back.
All right then. So let's roll into our first week. We've had our first week back. First 5 games have now been completed. So just a quick rundown of the scores. We had Hartbury RFC resoundingly beat Richmond at home 38-15. That was probably an expected score, Richmond being the newcomers to the league, obviously. Cornish Pirates probably created the headline of the week and maybe even the month, beating the newly relegated Saracens 25-17 at home. That is quite a big score, really, isn't it? Quite a big score. We'll get onto that a bit later. Coventry beat Bedford at home 10-9. Pretty low scoring game there, but they'll be glad to have the home win, I'm sure. Amptill lost at home to Doncaster Knights, Doncaster beating them 19-17. Amptill finished with only 13 men on the fields. Not sure they'll be too pleased with that performance. And then Ealing, they beat Nottingham away 52-3. Quite a big statement there. That's the rundown of the scores. Let's get onto the main talking points. So main talking points of the week. First things first, we can't really look past the Saracens storyline, can we? Who wants to pick up on Pirates beating Saracens on the first game of the season?
Away you go, Fid.
I knew you were going to do this to me. I knew it. Let's be honest, let's address the elephant in the room. Okay, I'm a Saracens fan. I've said it, I've cleared the air. I think feel like we can move on now.
Boo!
Boo! Hiss!
Boo!
Boo! As a fan, obviously, incredibly disappointed. But as a neutral, it just highlights just how good this league is and what might happen for the rugby pyramid if the RFU cuts, which we alluded to earlier, were left to continue. You know, this league would not be as competitive as it is now. And, you know, it's a great place for young talent and to showcase their skills. And, you know, Saracens perhaps have taken it a bit lightly. I know that might not seem the case with the team selection, and it was pretty much full strength minus the England contingent.
Well, yeah. Let's look at that. The relative strength of the Saracens team was pretty good. You've got some of their Premiership regulars were in there. Jackson Ray captaining the team from number 8. Manu Vanapola, who's obviously played Premiership before. I mean, you could name all kinds of people that have got Premiership experience in there. And yet they've been beaten by the Cornish Pirates, who I believe came mid-table somewhere in the Championship last year.
I think they were third, weren't they?
So, were they third? Okay, I've done them a disservice then. But yeah, that's not a great start for Saracens, really, is it?
I think it goes to show that, you know, as Fiddler said, you can't coast through it. They're you know, I'm sure they didn't say that in preparation or anything like that, but they're not going to be able to go through this league half asleep, and they're not going to be able to put out these, you know, really young teams full of academy lads and stuff like that and look at this as a kind of stepping stone, you know, back into the Premiership. But it's not that. They're two different leagues, and they need to be treated that way and they need to be respected like that. And so, but I think it's good. I think it's good all round. I think it's good for the league because everyone who's not a Saracens fan is buzzing. And then Saracens have had just a massive kick up the arse now. And it's a good thing. They're gonna really start chucking everything they've got at this league. And it might even go some way to suggest that, like, a team might be only be able to survive in the league that it's really meant for. So, you know, yes, Saracens can thrive in Europe and in the Premiership and on, you know, the world's biggest stage and stuff like that. And, you know, they had these talks about them playing the Crusaders or, you know, they were supposed to have the Stormers game and all that sort of stuff. But then what if you take them out of their comfort zone? What if the Premiership and European and that kind of top tier has just become their home ground, and where they might have come up against, you know, what some might call a lesser opponent when they're in a different arena, not a stadium, like a metaphorical arena, when they're in a different setting like that, it's thrown them out of whack. But I think all this does is make it more exciting for the coming weeks, which is great. And the, you know, you look online at the engagement it's been through the roof. Like Cornish Pirates are, you know, they're getting TV time and stuff like that. They've had that on their Facebook clip from BT Sport, Rugby Tonight and stuff like that. And I had a quick little peruse on some Twitter comments. The Cornish Pirates one, I was looking for some Saracens hate there. I was thinking this would be a laugh, but then, just see what people are saying. But it was nothing but like really positive pride in their own team from their fans, which is great, and also a lot of really gracious Saracens fans who were saying, better on the day, great job, you should be super pleased with yourself, really enjoy it, yada yada yada. I think everyone appreciates the scale of what happened, which is great. And I've gone on to the Saracens one, and it's just nothing but Saracens fans, you know, saying, I'm just looking at it now, I've been a Saracens fan for 15 years, I'm about to give up, it's all garbage, yada yada yada. Loads of people just absolutely laying into them. Oh, it'd be fantastic to see you stay down or relegated again. No, no, no. And I just think it's great, to be honest. I think it ruffles some feathers. I think, you know, I think it adds a bit of spice. Too many people toted this to be a walkover. You know what I mean? I think this has livened things up early on.
I think it certainly does. It sends a very early statement to the league that perhaps Saracens aren't unbeatable. They're not this invincible team that have come down and belong in the Premiership, and they're just going to bounce back up again. And I think a lot of people thought they were going to run away with this league and not lose a game, perhaps. And to lose the first one against a team, not even the top team from last year, is a massive message to everybody else in the league to say, yeah, if we turn up, we can do this. We can definitely do this.
Mm.
It's an interesting point you made there. I think, you know, the fact that it's only one game against each opponent, you know, that's everyone's cup final. You know, Saracens will have a target on their back. They are the big team. They're the newsworthy team. You know, it would be shockwaves, you know, if someone like a Richmond turned over Ealing. You know, no disrespect to Richmond, but if they were to turn over Ealing, it would send shockwaves, but not on the same scale that, you know, Saracens being turned over down at the Menai. But, you know, full credit to the Pirates. You know, it shows what great cultures and squads that are out there, and they're just willing to put their body on the line. And the one thing that I do want to say, imagine that place with fans. It's been absolutely rocking.
I think I did see something on social media saying the only thing that was missing was 5,000 Cornish. So, yeah, you did see on social media that what it meant to the Pirates. They really did revel in that win, didn't they? It meant the world to come out so strongly at the beginning of this truncated season.
Yeah, and on that as well, I just think that this is such a big opportunity for, you know, the one favour that Saracens being down in the Championship is granting the Championship, because, you know, you don't want to present it as the naughty step for the Premiership. You know, we'll send you to the Championship. That's not what it should be looked at. But what it does do is it's going to bring an unprecedented amount of popularity to the Championship, which is, you know, it goes hand in hand with why we're doing this podcast and all the rest of it.
Well, if you look at the main headline on the BBC Sport Rugby page yesterday was Saracens beaten by Cornish Pirates.
Yeah, and there you go. And it's great. I read something in, I think it was The Guardian this weekend, and it was with the Pirates owner, and he was saying obviously how hard it is with the funding cuts again, and you know, you've got to pour literally millions of one, or, you know, in the case of other teams as well, you know, a small group of people's money, private money into these clubs to keep them afloat. And they're losing out on their ticket entrances and all the rest of it. They were looking at how beneficial it will be to just have those games and be able to like stream those games, and they'll have a lot of people watching and all that, and they'll think, you know, that was great, even when we lose, kind of thing. It's like in the FA Cup when those, you know, Premiership teams or Premier League teams go to who did Tottenham play? Marine AFC or whatever it was. And Jose Mourinho was had his back up against someone's garden shed or whatever, something like that. But it draws such a lot of attention to those venues. And this was all in preparation for that team to lose. And for them to come out and win is absolutely fairy tale. Like, I couldn't imagine it with fans there. I can't wait for fans to be back and see those places, you know, go mental.
Hopefully we're not going to have to wait too long.
No, hopefully not. Hopefully we will. But also on that, I don't think this was a fluke result. You know, I think Cornish...
No, I hope not.
I think they've been quite strong over the last few years and perhaps haven't done quite as well as they might have wanted to. But if you look at the game yesterday, they dominated in certain aspects of the game. This wasn't a fluke result. You know, Saracens weren't just off the pace. I think they were beaten by the better side across the pitch. I think they won their battles. You know, you look at scrum time, the Cornish set piece, the Pirates set piece was just... It decimated Saracens. You know, and it forced us... Their game plan just kept forcing Saracens' mistakes. You look at the winning try. You know, it was a high up and under, which no Saracens player put a name on and collected. The ball bounced. And who was there? Great kick chase. And Rodri Davis picked it up and he's away under the sticks. Winning try was caused, you know, and they constantly put Saracens under pressure. And is it too early to have a bit of a dark horse? But, you know, I think people before the season would have probably said the final would have been Saracens Ealing, or that's what the neutrals want. But I'm going to say it, Cornish Pirates might be there. Might be there, will be there. There you go, I've said it.
Oh, hot take early on from Charles Fiedler. Hot take.
Okay, let's move on then. So, next story then. We've mentioned them a couple of times already. Ealing laying down a marker in their first game of the season. Winning away 52 points to 3, 8 tries scored. I think we all saw something like that coming, didn't we?
If we're being honest, yes. I think if you look at what Ealing have been building over the last few years, there's a squad there that just seem hungry, really hungry for success. They've been there or thereabouts at the top of the league for the last few seasons, narrowly lost to Newcastle in their games last year before COVID. So, yeah, incredibly strong squad as well. You look at some of those players, you know, there's a lot of experience there, whether that be ex-Premiership, boys from academies over in Ireland and Scotland. There's obviously a South African contingent there. So, very strong squad on paper. They seem to be building something very similar to Saracens around their culture, and it seems to be attracting that kind of quality of player, and good luck to them. You know, they've put down their marker. They didn't choke on the big stage like Saracens did. So, they'll be a strong force. And also, on my point on bye weeks, Ealing's isn't until round 11. So, they should they get to the final, they get a nice week's rest.
It seems like Ealing are building, they really are building a Premiership competitive side. It sounds, in championships past, teams have won the championship but not gone up because they don't meet the requirements. But I think it seems here, Ealing Trailfinders have really, they've got some intent to go up to the Premiership and try to compete at that level.
Definitely. You look at, you know, however many years ago when with the, you know, the new stadium and artificial ground that they've got there and the not just the seat, there's the amounts of seats and stuff like that, but the whole complex they've got, if you've ever been there, it's a pretty big sort of area, and that, you know, contest pretty well in the Premiership, I think, and yeah, it'd do well. And they had a season with, was it one season? Just one with London Broncos there. So they're getting that, you know, taste of real big game stuff. But alluding to what Fiedler said about, you know, building there within their team. You know, again, the papers this week were talking about, I think, what was it, 5 academy graduates in that team? Or maybe even more, 6 or whatever it was. There was, a good handful of Ealing's academy playing in that game, which they're obviously super proud of, and it goes to show that it's working. You know, you can't lie with that, proof is in the pudding. And you heard a lot in pre-season about their recruiting. They've done some, you know, they've made some good recruits from overseas, you know, they're really pleased with and really proud of. So maybe, yeah, maybe this is it. Maybe they've got all the pieces in place. Maybe this is their time. And at that point, I'll just explain what I thought when I saw that score. So that score says to me, right, they've got everything right. If I was Ealing right now, I'd be fucking fuming, to be honest. I'd be so angry because if you're, I don't know, whoever you are, whether you're a player, if you're a coach, if you're, you know, management, staff, whatever, and you've been trying for so many years to get it right, and now Ealing have finally got that formula, and this really could be the year, and you didn't have, you know, not necessarily because of COVID or anything like that, but you didn't have the whole Saracens debacle as well. Now, I know you've just said about it's not a foregone conclusion that Saracens are going to win the lot and it's going to go up, definitely not. But you'd think if Ealing have got a shot right now, you know, they've laid down that marker very early on in the season. And yeah, they've got two big obstacles in their way now in the shape of coronavirus and the issues that's caused with shortened season and season structure and blah, blah, blah. And the abnormally strong competition of Saracens. It's you know, a complete, you know, one-off there in terms of, you know, why would you have a team of that calibre in the championship? And it's just this one year. So was it all written in the stars for this year, for it to be Ealing? You know, what effect is that going to have? Are they going to get sick of being the bridesmaid? Are players going to stick around to see it through next year? We don't know. But yeah, that was my immediate reaction. I'd be angry.
I think they're loving it. I think, you know, this result, again, it sends out a marker to the RFU to say, look, you can't ring fence the Premiership. Look at us. Is this the best that the second tier of English rugby can produce for us? We've just gone and put 50 points on them on the road. Let us in. You know, for me, I think that they've got 10 games this season to prove to the RFU that there's something in the pyramid and we've got to keep that structure. So they'll be loving it. You know, they're here to
that
play.
That would be good.
They're here to play. And, you know, they're going to be a strong force over the next 10 rounds. And they want that Premiership slot, as do, you know, I suppose quite a lot of teams. That's why we play competitive sport. But for me, this result is just another nail in the RFU coffin of ring fencing. I think the more that they do this, the better it is. You know, I hate to say it, I think there's going to be teams that will cop more 50-point hidings, but it just proves the point that we've got to allow teams to do it. Otherwise, you don't get teams like Exeter. You don't get that fairy tale that came up from nothing, built, got to the Premiership, now European and domestic champions. You just it wouldn't happen. And
you've got Bristol sitting at the top of the Premiership at the moment, and they spent a good stint in the Championship. Okay, historically they've been a Premiership club, but they hadn't been for a long time. And now they're working up and they're looking to, they're on course to be there in the Premiership final.
I feel sorry for Nottingham, because that's a very tough opening fixture, especially with the a limited pre-season. You know, Ealing took part in the Trailfinders Cup. You know, Nottingham had a very limited pre-season compared to that. But I think, you know, they've got that game out of the way. I think they can look forward to the rest of the season and play with a bit of freedom now and really sort of take the league on. I'm excited to see what they can do. And, you know, I'm excited to see what all the teams can do. It's just a shame that we can't travel, because some of these away days would be epic.
Worth noting that Ealing did get they did have the wood over Saracens in a lot of the warm-up games, didn't they? For those who don't know, Ealing, I think they played 3 against Saracens. Correct me if I'm wrong.
2, I think.
Maybe 2, but
yeah,
they won
two,
both
yeah.
of them.
They won both of them.
So yeah, it's far from a foregone conclusion that Saracens are going to run away with this. Next game was Hartbury against Richmond. Richmond, obviously, the newcomers up from League One. Hartbury scored 38 points, Richmond 15. What do we think?
Just from a kind of macro point of view, I'd be pretty pleased with that if I was Richmond. It's not a huge score difference. I've played in much worse games than that. it's been the cause of it. It's not a huge score difference, and they've put a fair amount of points on them, so you know they can take that away as well. And the fact that you know three of the tries were on the wing and from one person, one player. A lot of people would say, "Oh yeah, well, why didn't they just when they sort that out? They couldn't adapt." Blah 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 blah. I would actually argue, well, they probably had a game plan. We'll go in here. We'll match them physically. Let's not let anything through the middle. Let's make that our real statement defensively. If you're gonna beat us, then you're gonna have to beat us out wide. You're gonna have to really really turn it on. And they've done that. And they've done it. You know, they've found one passage to the try line, and that was on that wing. And the rest of it kind of you know sort of held up. So I'd be pretty pleased with that, to be honest. We'll see if they do adapt, you know, in the long term and see what they can do against other teams. But yeah, I wouldn't be massively disappointed with that at all.
It's not a bad first showing in the Championship, is it? It's not an absolute hammering. They've got a couple of tries back in there. Okay, there's probably some work to do, but you kind of expect a little bit of adjusting when you go into a higher league.
I think both teams will be pleased. You know, Hartbury picked up 5-point win with the try bonus point. You know, on a personnel level, you know, Ben Foley scoring a hat trick in the first game, you know, obviously brilliant. They've obviously worked on some stuff in the limited time that they've had together, and it's worked. In terms of Richmond, a lot of boys coming up from League One, as you say, Jamie, and a lot of them, you know, new signings. So there's a few boys there from old Eltamians. You know, this was their first real Championship experience, and to travel away, two tries, perhaps, you know, left some chances out there. I think, on the whole, I think both teams will be relatively pleased with how the day went for them.
Yeah, they're definitely two teams at very different stages at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
Hartbury would definitely be looking to compete, and Richmond, obviously, everybody's playing to win, but Richmond, obviously, just looking to show themselves to be good competition at the moment and find their feet in this league.
Well, and the best thing for them is a free shot.
Well, that's true. No relegation, yeah.
So they should be able to go out and play with a bit of freedom and find out what works and what doesn't work. You know, when you need to play up the jumper rugby and keep it tight, and when you get the opportunities to throw it about a bit. And
it's
I think that's really exciting.
Good point. Not many teams get to have two guaranteed seasons in the Championship, do they, or in any hard
so league. On that Richmond coaching staff, if you just want to start bringing back the drop goal now, you know, just now's your chance.
That'd be just good. Drop It'd be goal, good to see the drop goals,
drop
back
goals
into the game.
Left, right, and centre, raining drop goals. Mm. Just set the record for a year.
Is that a cry for you signing up? Is that what that was? Was that a cheeky advert for the Sid Young drop goal coaching?
I have been known. I actually my own team that I play for, they opened their like new ground the beginning of last season, and I was playing on the wing. Yes, I know my physique doesn't suggest it, but yes, I was playing on the wing.
Hey, and, I've played on the wing before. I spent 10 minutes on the wing. 10 minutes on the wing.
Yeah, I was playing on the wing, and I was absolutely adamant that I was going to be the first person to score a drop goal on the new pitch, like through the new posts.
Really?
They said, "How are you going to do that? You're playing on the wing." I said, "You watch me. I'm
going to zip back in, make a beeline for the post."
I was warming up, right? I was on the like between the 5 and the 15 from the side, and I was banging these drop goals. Oh mate, but it never happened in the end, which I was fuming about.
Well, in my 10 minutes on the wing, which only happened because we'd run out of back subs and I was the youngest player on the bench. My 10 minutes on the wing, I was convinced I was going to run on to somebody putting a little chip over the top or grubber through. I was like, I'll collect it, I'll go over in the corner, it'll be the greatest try I've ever scored. Bearing in mind, I've only ever scored two tries at senior level. I am a second row, to be fair. Second rows don't score many, but yeah, second rows on the wing score even fewer. All right, let's talk about some Bedfordshire indiscipline then. Bedfordshire indiscipline. So we had two Bedfordshire teams in action this weekend. You had Bedford playing away at Coventry and Ampthill hosting Doncaster at Dillingham Park. Coventry beat Bedford 10-9. Low scoring game, only one try in it, but the kind of big takeaway from that was three Bedford yellow cards during that game. You're going to struggle to win games if you keep getting yellow cards. Amptill also got three yellow cards, which ultimately I think cost them the game. Doncaster had four penalties, so Amptill had outscored them in tries, 3-1. So to me, that really says that indiscipline absolutely did cost them that game.
I think it's hard to argue that. I really do. I think especially as I think off the back of two of those yellow cards, there were penalties kicked by Sam Olver for Doncaster. You know, it's difficult. I think, you know, also if you look back and, you know, if Amptill had kicked their conversions, they'd probably say that they'd have won their game. You know, so in terms of having your opportunities, I think they'll look at maybe converting them a little bit more. But certainly when you are in a tight game and that last 10 minutes they played with 13 men, it's going to be really difficult to see out and hold on to a lead if you've got one. And I think that just enabled Doncaster to creep into the game and sneak the win. Yeah, story of ill discipline and why it's important. You know, you look at England against Wales. Wales were gifted two tries, but you look at the England discipline after that, when we were back at 24-all, I think it cost them the game. And it's very hard to win games when you haven't got a full contingent of players on the park.
Is it coincidence that we're seeing three yellow cards in two games each? You know, or is it? Have they got a directive saying that you've got to be yellow card and everything now because they're going too mad, or is it everyone just wants to show how good they are at refereeing and willing to dish out yellow cards?
I wonder if it might have been over exuberance. Just first game back, everybody's been waiting for a long time to get back to rugby. Yeah, unless we start seeing a pattern develop, at the moment I think it's just a bit of over exuberance at the beginning of the season. Just happy to be back, maybe taking it a touch too far. I don't know the details of the yellow cards, but we'll see. We'll see if that develops, I think.
Well, for me, I think if a team's getting three yellow cards in one game, then it's the picture they're showing the referee, isn't it? You know, that's half your battle, isn't it? You've got to keep the ref on side. And if you're not doing that and you are ill-disciplined and you've given away a number of penalties in your own 22, then you've got to expect a card.
Unless the referee was Pascal Gauzère.
Oh, well. Yeah, but the thing is, he had all the technology available to him and he still got it wrong twice.
Oh, let's not get started on that. As much as I'm in agreement, Jesus, I've had enough of that this week.
Right, last play. Last play then, boys. Sid, what have you got for us?
Not to bang on about the Cornish Pirates game, but of course, Friday the 5th of March saw St. Piran's Day. It's the National Day of Cornwall, held on the 5th of March every year, apparently. Every year. The National Day of Cornwall, and it is named after one of the patron saints of Cornwall, who is also the patron saint of tin miners. Yeah, so there's something for you. And it was the same weekend as the Saracens match. And obviously, Cornwall needs its own day and its own patron saint, because we all know that Cornwall is a nation.
Its own country, yeah.
They just won't leave it alone, will they? They just can't drop it. Anyway. Sorry, Cornwall. So that was this weekend. Also, as you know, as you guys know, I'm a big fan of basketball and the NBA. So as well as being St. Piran's Day and weekend, it's also the NBA All-Star Game tonight. So the idea of the NBA All-Star Game is you get your best players, you sort of pick them, and then you have a big pool of players. And then your number one guy from the East and your number one guy from the West act as team captains. And then they draft their own teams. And then, you know, from East or West. And then they play each other. So what we're going to do this week is Fiddler and Jamie, you're going to be the captains of your All-Star Sevens team. Okay, so you're going to be playing in your Sevens squad. And I have for you here a pool of questionably some of the most famous people from Cornwall. we've got 12 players here, and so you're gonna be playing, and then you need to pick your six other teammates, okay? And then what we'll do, we'll have two teams at the end of it, and then, you know, our audience can decide which one's best. We'll think of something after we've done the game, a hashtag or something. Anyway, hashtag Sid's last play on Twitter. Hit me up. Hashtag Sid's last play. Whether you want Team Fiddler or Team Mountain. Mountain's too hard. Team Jamie or Team Fiddler. Okay? Here's your draft. Okay? So if you've got a pen and paper, it'll be an opportunity to write it down. I'll remind you of who's in it, but I would suggest writing it down. Okay? I don't know whether to protect myself from all the Cornish listeners or living in the real world where I know that we have basically no listeners. I've taken this from a couple of basically like Cornwall newspaper websites.
Right, come on, let's have them.
Okay, Mick Fleetwood.
Oh,
interesting.
Mick Fleetwood. And then number two is like direct adversary, Queen's own drummer, Roger Taylor.
Really? Okay.
So that's an interesting 1-2 combo you've got right there.
Learning things already.
Right, so there's the first two. We're 1/6 of the way in. It's weird, they do kind of come in pairs. Okay, so there are drummers up top. Olympians. Two Olympians coming in for you next. We've got Olympic rower, Helen Glover.
Legend.
Married to Steve Backshall.
Legend. Two legends.
There you go. Two legends, yeah. He'd be handy, wouldn't he? Old Steve.
Yeah.
He gets in the gym, doesn't he?
He does, actually, yeah.
Actually, I think the gym goes to him.
Ben Ainslie.
Oh, another legend.
Of course he's another from
legend.
Cornwall.
Absolute yeah. legend.
Everyone in Cornwall loves the ocean, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They just bloody love the sea.
Is that
they?
Sir Ben to us?
Sir Ben Ainslie, you're right, yeah. Sir Ben Ainslie.
So if you
five medals
Ben.
From 96 onwards. Yeah, hello, Ben. Hi. Congratulations. Number, what order should we do this in? Should we go to...
Just whoever's next on the list, Sid.
Nah. I've got to give it a bit more. Okay, stars of the silver screen. It's more just one silver screen. The rest of the small screen. Okay. John Rhys-Davies. Davies, in fact.
Gimli.
Do you know him?
Gimli.
Gimli. Yeah. Yes, well done. I thought some people might not have got the... you know, got the real name, but yeah, Gimli from Lord of the Rings, tough guy. Probably okay. Yeah, we can count this is silver screen. Does a lot of TV as well, but silver screen definitely. Tandy Newton.
Yeah.
Tandy Newton, a daughter of Cornwall.
Cool. And Cornwall, you can be proud of some of the people you produce, can't you?
Smashing out the goods. Okay, so this one's a bit controversial. She was actually born just over the border in Devon.
Oh, they're not going to have any of that.
But they still count it. Look, I this is what I'm saying. The sources are Cornwall newspapers. So take it up with them. But a big hitter in British TV, right? Dawn French.
Dawn French. Didn't realise she was from
good
Devon.
Good stuff.
From Devon. yeah, okay. Not born strictly in Cornwall, but he was born in Lancashire. Grew up in Newquay and still considers it his home, right? None other than Phil Schofield.
I was going to say Philip Schofield, you know.
Philip Schofield, there we go. Here's a curveball for you. Do you remember when Top Gear came back on with Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond, but it wasn't James May?
Oh, was it Tiffany Dell?
No.
He did Last Gear on Channel 5.
Fifth Gear on Channel Fifth 5, gear. Last Gear.
Last Gear. Who was it? Who was it with?
Jason Dore. He was a bit of a portly man with dark hair, but I thought he was quite charming. But yeah, they dropped him and got James May in. So I've put him in there. He was bottom of my list, I'm not going to lie. Okay, and then the final two in your draft, your sports stars, your land-based sports stars. Nigel Martin, former England goalkeeper, who also played a lot of football down in Cornwall, even after the heights of his career. At number 11, so if you thought Jason Doyle was your prop, you got competition here. None other than World Cup winner, Trevor Woodman.
An actual rugby player.
An actual rugby player. And number 12, one for the youngsters. One for the youngsters and the UK Ravers. A chap called Richard James, who you might not know, but he's more commonly known as Aphex Twin. Well, go see how hip you are, didn't it?
Don't worry, Fids, I've never heard of him either.
Wow. Everyone,
Aphex Twin.
Aim your abuse online at these two.
Okay, so how does this work? How does this work?
Okay, I could go into the long and complicated methods of how to do a draft, or I can go into
tell us who does what,
which is basically playground style. So
short and sweet.
That's basically what it is.
The longest last play ever.
Fids.
They'd be out on their feet if they were playing this long, wouldn't they? They'd be hanging out their backsides.
I'd just have asked the ref to just call it.
Right, Fids, who have you got number one in your draft?
So I can pick anyone.
Anyone. So this is like the kid at school who's just the best at everything.
Right, I'm gonna start Helen Glover.
Helen Glover going number one.
Glover's
huge.
In number one. Okay, she's gone. She's off the list.
That's what we're saying.
I'm gonna go Big Mick Fleetwood.
Oh, Big Mickey Fleetwood. All right, massive. Okay, Fiddler.
I'm gonna take John Rhys-Davies for my scrum.
Okay, all right. Going for strength. Okay.
I'm going to take Dawn French for my scrum.
Okay.
I think she's a powerhouse.
Dawn's a lot slimmer these days than what you might know, might usually associate her with. Like that could be the kind of shape that you'd usually associate.
Yeah, I think
her
she's
with.
A powerhouse, but she can also move around the field as a result.
Trevor Woodman.
He's going Woodman. You've got a lot. You're going a lot for the scrum at the moment, Charles.
No. Helen Glover's going to be my playmaking 10.
I'm going to go for Schof because I think he's probably got a bit of pace about him. Put him on the wing.
Going for Schofield, okay.
All right, and on that train of thought, the movie that Thandie Newton starred in.
Run, Fat Boy, Run.
So she's my winner.
Thandie Newton's gone, okay. So this is a good, nice game of Cornish sixes we've got going here, isn't it?
No, you're playing as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You're captains,
okay, fair
remember?
Fair.
Not just managers. Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather manage. But, you know. I'm going to go... Nigel Martin is going to be my fullback.
All right.
Oh, yeah, that's a great shout. Yeah, Nigel Martin in fullback. Okay. Fiddler, your number five pick.
I will take Mr. Aphex... Mr. Richard James.
Knowing nothing about him, you're going to take him and just hope he's a mystery prize. I don't know what you're going to get.
He's my X Factor.
Yeah, could have it.
Mr. Aphex Twin. Okay, all right.
He didn't even get his name right.
No, I didn't know. He probably won't want to play.
Be honest, mate. It'll probably bring some substances that you can dilute into the water bottles and everyone will have a cracking game. So
I'm going to take Ben Ainslie because he's got quick hands for sailing. He's going to have quick hands in the midfield.
Ben Ainslie, number five pick out of six.
Yeah, I know. Shocking, isn't it? But there we go.
Behind Mick Fleetwood.
And I'm going to treat Jason Doyle much like the BBC did and not pick him. I'm going to go with Roger Taylor.
You had me in the first half. You had me in the first half there, not going to lie.
I thought Charles was going to bolster his scrum even more then.
No. Went with some quick hands.
So I get Jason Doyle. Okay.
Don't sound so disappointed. Poor Jason.
Well, no. Like, if you think about a scrum of him, Dawn French and, well,
you.
Probably me. Unless I put myself on the other wing again and try and get that chip over the top, score in the corner.
Okay, so Fiddler, who had the number one pick, so should technically sort of have the advantage. Okay, Helen Glover, Olympic rower. He's got John Rhys-Davies, actor. World Cup winning rugby player, Trevor Woodman. Actress Dandy Newton. DJ Aphex Twin. And drummer from Queen, Roger Taylor. What I see in that team, I see a lot of creativity with your different kinds of musicians and creatives there. I could also see a robust and aggressive, gravelly, almost, if you will, physicality to the team. That's my initial reaction there to compliment you, Fiddler. Bearing in mind that you'll be in this team as well. So I think that's quite a well-rounded side.
I think I'm the perfect blend of grunt and finesse.
Yeah, grunt and finesse. You know what? If I went up to someone, one of our mates, right, and I said, describe Charles Fiddler in two words, grunt and finesse, I think is exactly what they'd say.
Grinesse, if you will, or front.
Grinesse. Team Grinesse.
He's got a lot of front, that's for sure.
points for Jamie there, straight away. Jamie wins kickoff in this game for that. Right, okay. So, Team Jamie Mountain, you've got Mick Fleetwood, drummer and founder of Fleetwood Mac. You've got Dawn French, British starlet of the BBC. You've got Philip Schofield, British breakfast television hero. We've got international... It takes so long for us to get to the sports people. International football player, goalkeeper nonetheless, which is even more suited to rugby. Nigel Martin, five-time Olympic medalist, including a gold medal, Sir Ben Ainslie, and one season of Top Gear presenter. He might present this with us. Should we give him a ring?
I'm going.
No, if he wasn't good enough for the BBC, he's not good enough for us.
Oh, yeah, maybe not, yeah. And Jason Dore as well. So I'm not going to lie, mate. When you picked Mick Fleetwood first, he's got a notorious reputation for not necessarily splitting up, but coming between is perhaps the wrong phrase, causing some... rifts in previous groups that he's been in.
I only need to win one game, Sid. So there is that.
Maybe I'm looking too much into it.
So come on, start beating around the bush. Pick your winner. Pick your winning team.
My winner, Ben. I mean, it's hard. I'm gonna say. You know what? The more I look at it, actually, Jamie's team does look better.
I'm taking that as a win.
I think I'd rather hang out with Fiddler's team. I think I'd rather go for a beer with them. But I think Jamie's team would probably win.
I've picked wisely.
Yeah, I think Jamie's team would probably win it.
We won't be inviting you for that beer.
And there we go. So I've won the inaugural last play. And that brings us nicely to the end of the first ever episode of Changing Room 4, the Championship Rugby podcast. Lads, it's been fun. I've enjoyed myself.
I think we've talked more about Sid's game than we have the actual rugby. So I think
we've spent a lot of time on last play, and I'm not going to lie, we're probably going to get a lot of it out in the edit. But
hey, you wait till I get bought out, right? I'll get bought out by like Spotify or Apple or someone huge, and they'll just want me to do that, right? And then you're gonna wish you kept all that in. You're gonna wish you kept the 45 minutes that we spent on that game.
maybe we'll see how it goes. And well, that's it for round one of the Championship season 2021. Been an interesting first round, and it's been an interesting first podcast, so I look forward to next week. So tune in again next week. We'll be doing one of these every round, so hope you've enjoyed yourselves, hope you've enjoyed listening to us. It will get better, I'm sure it will get better eventually. But hang around, and we'll try and keep you entertained some more next week. Right, Sid, thank you very much. Charles, thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you, lads.
We'll see you next time.